Good morning and welcome to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori on this Saturday morning. How are we doing this morning? So glad you can join me where I am every Saturday morning right here on WLIW 88.3 FM. You can also hear the show from anywhere on the planet online at WLIW.org/radio. And each show is archived on my website at AnneLiguori.com and distributed on podcast so you can hear the show at your leisure. And if you're at AnneLiguori.com and you're a huge sports fan and history buff, you can also watch TV interviews that I did with the greats in sports. Everybody from Mickey Mantle, Wilt Chamberlain, Gordie Howe, to Ted Williams, on and on and on and on, Sam Snead. All these interviews are on my website at AnneLiguori.com for you to watch. Well, this morning I share an interview I did with two-time Masters champion Bubba Watson. Now, Bubba, he recently came out with a book called Up and Down, Victories and Struggles in the Course of Life. And most golf insiders knew that Bubba has been dealing with anxiety issues throughout his golf career. But in this book, he really opens up about the extent of these issues, his anxiety and how he's trying to overcome it. And he talks a lot about his family life and wanting to be a great father and a great husband. It's a very heartfelt interview. He's very honest and open. And, you know, it's easy to mistake Bubba's personality when you meet him or watch him on television or had a chance to maybe really observe him. But it's easy to mistake him as perhaps antisocial or awkward. People may think he's even arrogant. But it was always my contention that Bubba is certainly awkward in social situations, around crowds, on and off the golf course, in front of the media, because he does have anxiety. And he admits to all that. And whether you are a golf fan or not, I think you will find Bubba truly compelling as he opens up about the issues that have plagued him as he became a star in the golf world and more pressure and expectations were placed on him. Whether he put it on himself or whether it was coming from all sides, it still was there. You know, he won two Masters titles, the first in 2012 and again in 2014, which is incredible. And he talks about how his life really changed from that point on, and how he's dealing with the issues that plague him. And I had a chance to, I've covered both those Masters titles that Bubba won, just incredible shot making, particularly out of the pine straw on the 10th hole when he was in that playoff against Louis Oosthuizen to win his first Masters in 2012. You know, he hit that hook shot with a gap wedge and went on to win in that first playoff hole. But, you know, he's such a creative player, very imaginative. He's never had a golf coach before. He's just sheer raw talent. And it's great to kind of get inside his head. And it's great that he had enough courage to really talk about, you know, his mental health issues. And hopefully it will help other people recognize perhaps if the, you know, what their issues are and perhaps to get help for it. So I think the book is fascinating, and I think it's a great read, whether you're a golfer or not. And also in the show, I look back on my experience playing in the BMW Celebrity Pro-Am this past June in Greenville, South Carolina, the Corn Ferry event. My guest in this segment is former PGA Tour player Grant Waite. Grant was there caddying for his son, Austin, and I thought we had a very enlightening conversation on what it was like for him as a father to coach his son and to caddy for his son. And Grant is coaching some of the top female players in the world, and we talk about the differences of coaching male and female players, which I found just fascinating. Well, the big news in golf this week is that Tiger Woods made his first public appearance since the February car crash that shattered his right leg with, it just really did a number on his entire body. But his right leg was shattered and he had additional injuries to his ankle and foot. Police say he was driving at least 84 miles an hour in a 45 mile per hour zone when his car crossed that medium. in on a road in southwest Los Angeles, and his car rolled over several times down a hill. And Tiger, always very private, did not shed any additional information on the accident, other than he said he doesn't remember any of it. When a reporter asked him about it, he said all those answers have been answered in the investigation. He said, so you can read about all that in the police report. In that police report, an empty pharmaceutical bottle was found in a backpack at the scene of the crash. No label on it. The report said there was no evidence that Tiger had applied his brakes to reduce his speed going around that curve. And a former police detective who reviewed the crash scene said it was like a classic case of falling asleep behind the wheel. And when he asked Tiger what happened, he said Tiger told him he did not remember being involved in any traffic collision and thought he was in Florida at the time. And police did not examine Tiger's blood for evidence of medication and really did not do much of an investigation at all. Tiger said at the press conference this week that there was close to a 50-50 chance that he might have had to have had his leg amputated. He also said he spent 3 months in bed that was set up in his home in Jupiter, Florida, when he got out of the hospital. And then he eventually moved around on crutches and now is walking on his own, however gingerly it looked like. A few weeks ago, he posted a video on social media of him hitting iron shots. So obviously that sparked a lot of interest about, oh, will Tiger come back? And when will he come back? And, you know, will he win another major? Well, Tiger said his full-time playing days on the PGA Tour are over and that he just may pick and choose a few tournaments to compete in when his body is ready. He will be 46 years old in December, at the end of this month, December 30th. And the press conference was held in the Bahamas at Albany Golf Club, where he hosts his own event there, the Hero World Challenge. Well, lots of mixed opinions coming from that press conference, mostly that Tiger offered very little details about the accident. Well, you know, it's no surprise whatsoever. I mean, he's always controlled the agenda. So I'm not sure why any reporters would think that this time it would be different. He did appear humble and very low key. He did say he knows he's lucky to be alive. And, you know, beyond that, I think we heard more from Tiger about the details of his recovery and his questionable future on the course than he's been really ever willing to share. So I thought it was more open than he normally is. You know, he's nowhere near where he needs to be to compete. He said he won't be able to practice as much, and he has accepted that his playing days as it relates to competing full time are over. And, well, you know, in the past, he has limited his tournaments. I mean, he only played 13 events on the PGA Tour in 2019, and that was one of the few years that he was, you know, rather healthy. But, you know, Tiger said he's at peace with his new reality, that he's made the climb enough times. And I've said all along that, you know, this potential comeback is really a mental battle. Obviously, it's a huge physical battle of his coming back. He's always been in so much pain from, you know, the surgeries that he's had. And now with these added injuries, it's more of a physical battle than ever. But, you know, coming back mentally, does he really want to do what it requires mentally to come back? And, you know, and can he physically? Probably not. He has 15 major titles, 82 victories on the PGA Tour. You know, I just heard a Tiger this week who has really accepted the reality of his physical limitations, his age, and sounds very content that he doesn't need to prove anything else to anybody and not to himself anymore. All right, we're going to take a quick break, come back, and you will hear first, my interview with Grant Waite, former PGA Tour player who's coaching various women on the LPGA Tour and his son on the Korn Ferry Tour. And then you'll hear what I think is a very revealing interview with two-time Masters champion Bubba Watson. And joining me now is the ubiquitous Grant Waite, professional golfer, coach, caddy. Grant, you're doing it all. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. I've never been described like that before, but thank you.
Well, what a pleasure to have played a practice round with your son, Austin Waite, and Max McCready this past week at the BMW Charity Pro-Am. And boy, what a great week.
Yeah, well, it was also fun playing with you, just by the way. But yeah, it was. It is a great week. You know, they put on a really good tournament. The golf course was, despite all the rain, was in remarkable shape. And it was my son's first Korn Ferry event, so that was, you know, exciting for him. And it was fun for me to caddy for him. So it was a great week. And the tournament's still obviously going to finish up today, and it should be pretty exciting because there's lots of birdies out there.
Lots of birdies. Unbelievable how low they're scoring. I said it's Max McGreevy. I love that name, Max McGreevy. You caddied for your son, Austin.
Right. Yeah, he just wanted, as his first event, he wanted me on the bag just so he's familiar with me, obviously, and then he helped him feel a little bit more comfortable. I understand his game, so I could help him in certain situations, and it was good. You know, he played fine, didn't score as well as he liked, and made a couple of mistakes in the second round. And unfortunately led to a bogey, then a double bogey. And of course, with the scores going so low, he then had to try and press to make birdies to make the cut, and he ended up not doing it. But he played. I was actually very happy with how he played overall. Just the scores weren't there for him.
What's that father-son dynamic like, you know, as you coach him and caddy him now, you know, for him on the Korn Ferry Tour? I mean, that must be interesting, especially, you know, when you don't make the cut, it's disappointing.
Yeah, well, it is disappointing, and, you know, I'm probably as his father as disappointed as he is that he didn't make the cut versus, you know, a normal caddy-player relationship. However, my two sons both play golf, and my oldest one here is doing it professionally. So when I help them, a lot of credit goes to them that they listen. You know, it's very difficult as a parent to coach, because as they're growing up, you tell them, you know, you got to clean your room, do your homework, take the trash out, can't do this, you can do that, don't do this. And everything sounds like a command. And then when you start coaching, that starts to sound the same way. So I think that's why there's a lot of rejection from kids towards their parents as they try and help them play golf. Now, the only advantage I've got is I can do it, and do it at a pretty high level, and play it at the highest level possible. So I have a lot of legitimacy. So they listen, and that credit really goes to them.
Yeah, no, he was just, I just am so impressed with your son and all the guys I met this week. They're just incredible people and players. And can you pinpoint what separates the talent on the Korn Ferry Tour and the PGA Tour? I mean, there's so many talented players on the Korn Ferry Tour these days. And, you know, it's just so hard to make that leap, right?
Yeah, so the style of golf is a little bit different on the Korn Ferry versus the PGA Tour. Most of the Korn Ferry golf courses are a little bit shorter. They don't have quite as much rough. And the scores are just very, very low. Now, on the tour, they're low as well, but not to the same extent. So the golf courses are a little more demanding. So when you look at the players out here, it really is a scoring tour where you have the opportunity to shoot extremely low almost every day. Now, there are a few courses that aren't that way, obviously, but we would say as majority of the courses they play are much more just shorter, a lot of wedge game, a lot of putting involved. Now, on the PGA Tour, you're going to have to play some more difficult shots. And so if you are playing well, it's easier to separate yourself from the rest of the field. But look, you know, I'm out here watching all these young men trying to get to the PGA Tour, and the talent level is just extremely high. It is, they are really, really good. And I think whoever comes out of here at the end of the year will be ready to play on the PGA Tour for sure.
Absolutely. I mean, how difficult is it to move up to the PGA Tour from the Korn Ferry?
Well, here's the thing. You know, it's you have to keep telling yourself it's the same golf. You know, it's still a tee box, a fairway, and then there's a green, and there's no real difference. That's what you tell yourself. So it's more you all of a sudden you're comfortable on the Korn Ferry Tour, you've played well, then you move up a level, and then next thing you walk on the driving range and you're hitting balls between Rory McIlroy and Dustin Johnson, and you've watched them on TV and you know how great they are, and suddenly you feel like you have to play better than you know how, and it's just not true. If you play golf the way that you're capable, if you've graduated from the Korn Ferry Tour, then you're easily good enough to make it on the PGA Tour. So there's really a mental shift that you have to get past the fact that you think you have to play better than you know how, because you just don't.
Yeah, it's really more how you handle it mentally, right? It's all between the ears. It's the toughest mental game out there, right?
Yeah, I always say to people that, they say golf's such a mental game, and it's 100% mental, 90% mental. And I always say, well, every shot you ever hit is 100% mental and 100% physical. If you don't have the physical side of it, you're wasting your time. If you don't have the mental, emotional side, you're wasting your time too, because there's just too many people who can do both. So in the case of when you shift up a level, it's the same thing when you see people who are trying to win a tournament the first time. It's just more difficult than people who have been there before because they understand the process. And the same thing moving up to that level to get to the PGA Tour is the game is they're all good enough and you see it. It's just, can they handle the fact that suddenly, they're out there playing at the highest level and their scrutiny of performance and the attention you get. Now, some people really like it and some people prefer not to have that. And that's a really, really a big thing. So that mental part is really, that's what you're dealing with. And I think if you can quantify that in your mind that, okay, still just golf, then you'll be fine.
Right. And talking about, somebody who has the entire package is one of your students, somebody that you coach, and her name is Patty Tavatanikit, who won the ANA Inspiration. How did you connect with her? And she with you?
Yeah, so Patty, about almost a year ago now, came to me. She lives in Orlando, and she actually joined the same golf course I'm at. And she was playing. She was on the Symetra Tour, graduated out onto the LPGA, and she started playing on the LPGA Tour. And she wasn't playing her best golf. She just was struggling, and came to me and said, "Look, I'm not playing as well as I'd like. Can you help me?" And, immediately I played with her a couple of times and watched her hit balls. And then we started talking about what I think she needed to do. And she liked what I had to say. And so we just started working together. And then I went and caddied for her at the end of the year, towards the end of the year in Georgia, so I could see what was happening in tournament golf. And I learned an amazing amount about how she sees a golf course and the shots she plays and what adjustments we really needed to make and her strengths and weaknesses. So we went to work on the off season, and you got to give her an amazing amount of credit, because instead of going back home to Thailand to spend time with her family, which she knew if she didn't do it, she wouldn't see them for a couple of years, she decided, I'm not, because of COVID, I'm going to stay here and work on my game, get ready for the season. So we spent quite a bit of time working on her game. And then at the start of the year, I caddied for her again at the first two tournaments, and she finished fifth and 13th. And we did that because we wanted to institute the changes that we'd made and just see how they show up in a tournament, and so I could be there to problem solve for her. And once she got through those two tournaments, she understood what she was doing. I'm like, okay, you're good now. And she went on to win the ANA in really almost in record fashion. And if it wasn't for Lydia Ko's historic final round, she would have, and she still won by a couple, she would have won by six or seven. That's how dominant she was in that event. But look, with Patty, she's always been a good player, and her parents, and especially her dad, deserve a lot of credit, because he developed her, and she went to UCLA and won seven times in 2 years. So it's not like she came from nowhere. She was good. She just had lost her game a little bit, and I just kind of helped to get back on track.
What a great success story. Now, does your approach as a coach vary when it comes to coaching the men and the women? Is it different at all?
Oh, it's very different. The demands for women's golf is totally different than men. Now, where men have a big advantage in this game is that they've just got speed and power and strength. They just got more of it. So they can overpower the golf course, and at times they can use their strength in a golf swing and overpower sometimes some average mechanics or not such great mechanics. But women, because of speed, they just cannot do that. So they have to be more precise. And I've always said that most men, average golfers, or people who play golf as a hobby and love the game, should go watch the women play. And anyone should, because they play the game with precision. They cannot use. Well, Patty may be a oddity. She's got some speed and power, but most of them have to place the ball around the golf course in a very precise manner. And they're good at it, and they're really good at it. I'd coached one other woman before Patty and never really been to an event. And since I went with Patty to those events, and now I'm coaching three on the LPGA Tour and just picked up a fourth one, I really, really respect what those women do, because they have to play the game differently. So when I look at their swings, there's some things that they must do that men just don't have to do.
Yeah, it's just a whole different game, right? The women and the men. Yet these women
Yep.
hit the ball a mile, you know.
They
So you
do, and
respect their power too, you know.
yeah, well, that's what I'm saying is if you go watch the women on the LPGA, they hit the ball further than the average male. They do. Their club head speeds are, up close to 100 mile an hour, just under 100 mile an hour. And when I give lessons to a lot of the average players, their club head speeds the same or less. And so if you really want to understand how to play the game at that speed, I would go watch the women, because you go watch Rory McIlroy, Dustin Johnson, or Bryson DeChambeau. I mean, the average person can never do that. They just got so much speed that they've developed over their lifetime that if you really wanted to understand how to play the game at your speed, the average player's speed, they should watch the women, because it is amazing how good they are for what they and how they play the game. I've just got a lot of respect for them. It's amazing to
Absolutely.
watch.
And I have a lot of respect for you that you're coaching both men and women, and you're such a joy to be with. It's been such a great week at the BMW Charity Prom. Did you have the opportunity to enjoy, all the festivities or any or Greenville at all, or was it all golf for you?
No, when I played the tour, we tried to make a point at times to go and just experience the local culture, and so we did that a little bit. And we had my son. We're good friends with King Griffey Jr., who played with my son, and so
Sure.
yeah, we spent some time with them. And look, the
Is he a
Greenville
power
area.
hitter on the is he a power hitter on the golf course as well?
Yeah, well, as you would expect, he is. So he's got a lot of club head speed. He's got a
Oh
little
my
bit of problems
gosh.
with directional control, but he's definitely got some speed. So it
I
was
give
fun.
the
We had a good
pros a
week.
lot. I give the pros a lot of credit for putting up with us amateur golfers, that's for sure.
Well, look, I'll tell you this, and all the players are grateful for the opportunity to play a tournament, and if the amateurs are involved, we understand this is not what you do for a living, and everyone's very patient, and they actually enjoy meeting different people and having a good time with the players that they play with.
Yeah, I just had the best time. And it gives me such incredible, as a journalist and a broadcaster in this field, it gives me so much more insight and even more appreciation for these guys. I've always respected them, but when you play alongside them, it's unbelievable. Grant, thanks so much for joining me. Really appreciate it. Let's do it again sometime.
Well, anytime, Anne, and it was a pleasure meeting you.
Welcome back to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori, and it is my pleasure to welcome two-time Masters champion, 12-time PGA Tour winner, Bubba Watson to the show. Of course, husband to Angie, father to two adopted children, and author of Up and Down: Victories and Struggles in the Course of Life. Welcome to Sports Interview, Bubba.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to talk to you. I've been following your career, since you actually started playing professional golf. And it must feel great, though, to get your story out there, to really share what happened to you. And it probably took a lot of courage to do it in this book. What are your thoughts about finally kind of telling your story?
Yeah, it's very freeing to talk about my struggles to help me, right? That's how we get better is instead of hold it in, or I feel we get better. We instead of hold it in, we let it out. And the more I share, the more freeing it is, because you get to hear it, you get to hear where I come from and where I'm headed. I want to take that next step forward and to be a better person. And so for me, it's very freeing, but it's also, it was great for me to try to help other people. If somebody else is going through something, they see that I can have the courage to talk about it and not be ashamed of it or be afraid of it. And so, yeah, it was just, it was very exciting to write the book, and it was just a perfect timing to get it out there.
You know, a lot of people look at Bubba Watson, two-time Masters champion, or any player making a great living in professional sports and say, what can honestly be all that bad? How do you answer those critics?
That's a great question. But, you know, truthfully, though, there's no matter what I do, no matter how good I am at something or good at whatever my job is, or no matter how much money I give to charity or whatever, people are still going to dislike Bubba Watson. I mean, it's just human nature. People like you, dislike you. They like you. It doesn't matter. And so nobody knows the situation I'm in. Nobody knows the money I make. They see the money I make on tour. Nobody knows the charity dollars I give. Nobody knows my family's medical history. Nobody knows, truthfully, what I'm doing behind the scenes. So I can't really vouch for anybody's. I can't judge anybody else, and nobody else should judge me. You know, the whole goal is to love one another and respect one another and try to help one another. And that's where I want to be, and I've always wanted to be there. You know, golfing is my job, but there's other things I really want to do in this world. And so I really don't focus on, do I deserve money? Do I not deserve money? I don't really look at anybody else and try to judge. So, yeah, I mean, when I look at critics, they're going to be critical of me no matter what I do. So I really don't even think about that.
That's true. Really good point. And, you know, most people can't relate to the highs and lows of a professional career in golf or any professional athlete's career. I mean, you know, yes, they'd give anything to live that life, but help them understand, if you will, how did things unravel for you? You know, the expectations you placed on yourself, the pressure. What was it all like? And what is it all like as it continues?
Yeah, that's a good one. You know, I didn't grow up wanting to be famous or a celebrity. I grew up wanting to win golf tournaments. I grew up wanting to play baseball, basketball, whatever that sport was at that time. And it came out to be I came out to be a golfer, but two-time Masters champion, that's what I dreamed of, but not the stuff that comes with it. When people get microphones in their face, you know, they say things, they have bad days, they have bad moments. You know, we get angry just like anybody else does. So just because we're athletes, we're entertainers first, right? That's what sports is about. It's about entertaining. And so, yeah, I mean, it's very tough, especially now with social media, with the things that people say or put on there and they get to hide behind a fake name. Yeah, it's very tough. I mean, again, it goes back to that love. We all want love. We all want respect. And that's what we're searching for. We all want to just be loved. And when social media, you can hide behind it or you know, the media can say things that are true or untrue. You know, it's hurtful. And so, yeah, having a microphone or a camera in your face, it's very tough. I mean, it's not an easy way to live. And I'm not even close to some of these top athletes that have cameras on them all the time. And I feel for them. I mean, if I think my life is tough at some times, it's very positive, but sometimes it gets tough. There's athletes out there, celebrities out there that go through a lot more than me. So, I mean, I feel for those people, you know, but it's one of those things where when you have that microphone in your face, the world changes. Being a celebrity changes how you put that next foot forward and makes it very difficult.
Sure. I mean, nothing really prepares somebody, you know, to once they become a celebrity or a star. You're working toward a goal that you had from the very beginning, right? But then once you get there and achieve these incredible dreams, you know, you're not really prepared for what the limelight is like, and it's not all rosy.
Right. You know, I mean, it's like any sport, like any sports team, right? You pull for your sports team and you dislike the other sports team. And so with that being said, you know, there's no guidelines. There's no celebrity guidelines. There's no help books for celebrities or an athlete. So, yeah, it becomes very difficult. You know, when people start judging me off of my golf, and they're judging me as who I am as a person off of my golf, then that's definitely going to get me down fast. And that's what happened to me. I started watching the world rankings, listening to what people are saying, looking at social media. And I went down the wrong path and, I, you know, started getting a lot of doubts in my head, doubts of who I am as a person, doubts if people love me, if people like me, doubts if my wife, if I'm the right husband my wife needs, the right dad my two kids need. So, yeah, I mean, you go down a dark road real fast when you start looking at all this information that's out there. Doesn't matter if it's good information or bad information. We still look at it because we're human. And so, yeah, there's no guidelines. And so you're just trying to figure out life now with a microphone and a camera around you most of the time.
And I know you reached a breaking point that you write about. I won't give that away in your book, Up and Down, Victories and Struggles in the Course of Life. But what did you do once you reached that point to kind of turn things around? What were some of the steps that you took to turn your life around?
The simple answer is share. I went to the doctor multiple times over the course of, you know, give or take 10 years, 12 years on the PGA Tour. And then finally, my lowest point, 2017, I fell to my hands and knees. And then when I finally got off my hands and knees, you know, asking the Lord to help me, you know, I went to my wife and I shared with her my fears. I shared her my the reasons why I'm this way. I mean, she could see me losing weight. I mean, everybody around me could see me losing weight. And so it wasn't a true medical heart problem, lung problem, liver, kidney, blood. It wasn't a sickness that way. It was the mental side was eating me alive, basically. And it was making me lose weight and just getting, my body didn't feel good. My stomach hurt all the time. Just anxious, just anxiety, stress. Just everything you can dream of, negative, that's what I dreamed up in my head. And I had to share that. And so I shared that with my wife. I shared it with my closest friends. I shared it with my team. And it freed me, just kind of like this book. Like I said, this book freed me up. And it's letting it out. Instead of trying to hold it in and trying to be a tough man, I had to let it go. I had to share it. And the only way for my relationship to be great with my wife, and then we've been married 17 years, is to share with her everything. And I want her to share everything with me so we can work on things. And that's really what I did. I realized that I needed to let this out, and I need to let it out to the people that I truly love. And then I decided to try to help other people. So that's why I put it in the book.
And it really is about how we handle situations mentally, right? I mean, the decisions we make, you know, do I lose my temper or do I maintain self-control? You know, we are ultimately in control of our actions, right? So, and our decisions. And I know it's so hard. You get so emotionally involved in something. But, you know, I guess once you started sharing, you know, what was happening to you, then you kind of started looking at, all right, I can make better decisions on the golf course. I can control my temper. I can do this. You know, I can do that. I get, you know, all of us face these issues. It's not just, you know, Bubba Watson, right? We all kind of have to figure out, okay, what are we going to do next? It's up to us. It's really in our control.
Right, 100%. You know, and one of the things that I realized is my bad days start with less sleep. So the better I sleep, the better rest I get, the better I'm going to wake up in the morning, more energy. You know, obviously, try not to eat at my candy shop all the time, so I have to take out some of the sugar. And, you know, and I had to look at other things in my life that were taking me to bad spots or bad energy levels. And yes, I mean, it doesn't matter what you're doing in life. It doesn't matter where you're at in life. We have the decisions, and we can make good decisions or bad decisions or tough decisions. And yes, it's very difficult. This is not about Bubba Watson, a golfer, and his tough road. This is about everybody. We all have some issues in our life. Now, if we want to fess up and be honest about them, that's one thing. But we all know we're all going to go through some kind of issues at some point in our life that are going to be very, very difficult and very sad. And hopefully we can hug each other and move forward and help our friends move forward in their tough road.
And I know for a while there, you were almost in denial, right? When your caddy, Teddy Scott, would mention something to you like, oh, you shouldn't have, you know, lost your temper there, or, you know, why'd you do that? And then Ben Crane, you write about your buddy, the fellow PGA Tour player, Ben Crane, actually came up to you and sat down with you and, you know, had a heart to heart. And it took you a while for all that to kind of, I guess, sink in.
Yes, 100%. I mean, when people come to you, again, we all deal with it differently, right? And I choose to deal with it very slowly. And so, you know, first of all, you have to trust those men, and I look up to those men. So I really did respect them for saying something and talking to me, but I'm a slow learner. So, you know, it really didn't hit home till later when I mean, my darkest hour, right, in 2017. And so, you know, then you're like, you call them and say, hey, man, thank you for saying something. Sorry that it took me so long, or sorry that I go back down this road again. So yeah, really, you know, I was, again, like I said earlier, it was letting the world rankings and these things happening in the golf world, like FedEx Cup, trying to make the Ryder Cup in the Olympics and different things. I was letting that dictate how I was and who I was as a person, instead of just going, okay, this is just my job is to play golf, not who I am as a person. And so, you know, I didn't realize what they were trying to explain to me until I went to my darkest road and started coming out of it. Because yeah, they saw it. They saw me going the wrong way. And I, like I said, I'm a slow learner. So I've apologized to them, and I thanked them as well. And I tried to put that in the book where these two men could see it. And I just didn't listen right away.
And isn't it great that they care so much about you and had the guts to talk to you about it? A lot of people wouldn't do that, right?
For sure. 100%. I was thankful that these guys do. I mean, they really do. It wasn't about anything for them. They weren't getting anything out of this. Ted Scott, I could have fired him, right? And so he was definitely being a man of courage and stepping up and talking to me, knowing that, I mean, if I'm that mean, I could definitely fire him on the spot, but I didn't, because I trusted him and I respected him so much that, again, like I said, it just took me a while to understand and really get what he was saying. And then it wasn't until a few years later when I go, oh, there's the red light. There's what he's talking about. And, you know, now I'm coming out of it and trying to help other people like he helped me.
And speaking of Teddy Scott, who you have a very close relationship with, I mean, he's been your caddy for, what, since 2007. You know, I read you recently parted ways as far as the caddy-player relationship with Teddy. What led to that decision, Bubba?
Yeah, it's 15 years. End of 2006, he joined, started carrying my bag, and 15 years into this relationship of friend. I mean, I would say friend now. I felt like it was time. He felt like it was time. There's so many things he wants to do. And, you know, when you look at his retirement and the way he's planned out his life, you know, he needs another great 10 years. And I told him, I said, man, go help some young kids. You're so talented that somebody's going to pick you, a great player is going to pick you up, or some young kid that needs advice like I needed when you got on my bag. So we didn't part ways. It wasn't a firing. It wasn't a quit. We knew that his leadership was needed elsewhere, and I couldn't guarantee in him a great 10 years, you know? And so I think he's been on a couple bags, and I think he's going to do great. He's going to hopefully lead somebody else to a couple Masters wins, and they'll both, be writing a great book again about, you know, how great their two Masters wins were.
I mean, will you be able to connect with another caddy who understands you and your game like Teddy? I mean, you're such a creative player, so imaginative. I mean, you need a special person who really knows your game and lets you be you.
Yeah, that is a great question. Maybe if the caddies read this book, they might not want to. You know, it's funny because, you know, I didn't know Ted Scott. Ben Crane is the one that led me to Ted Scott. And so in 2006, you know, we never met each other until that day that we joined up at Boston. And so he learned me. I mean, that's the thing, though, right? Like, personalities are going to mix or not mix. So you don't really say, hey, I'm hiring you full time. You give them a couple weeks so you can learn him or he can learn you. Or he might decide he's not right for me or I'm not right for him. And so, yeah, so it doesn't – I mean, me and Teddy had to learn each other those first couple of weeks to see if we wanted to work. So I think there's a guy or girl out there that wants to loop for me and caddy for me, and hopefully we can win some tournaments, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Golf teaches us so much. Golf teaches us many life lessons, Bubba, and I'm curious if you can perhaps pinpoint a couple lessons that you learned in golf that you've carried over to life. I mean, when you think of golf, it teaches us patience. It teaches us restraint. It makes us come up with instant decision making, and it teaches us sportsmanship. Has golf taught you that carries over to life lessons?
Wow. Well, because of the book and what I've been talking about and some of my downfalls, it's definitely taught me that golf is just a job. It's just something I love to do. So I will play golf all day long with my friends at home, and I love it. And I will argue over the dollar that they owe me. And so for me, it's more about getting out there with friends, and professional golf is a little different, right? It's you're trying to beat somebody, you're trying to do this, you're trying to do that. And so I learned to realize that golf, at the end of the day, if I win or if I lose, it's just my job. It's just something I love to do, but it doesn't dictate who I am as a person. And so I can't let a bad round come home with me. I can't let winning a tournament come home with me. When I say that, I got to treat Angie the same way no matter what. I got to treat my kids the same way no matter what. I've got to celebrate their stuff way more than I celebrate my stuff, because that's what my goal is. My goal is to teach my kids right from wrong, and hopefully they will teach their kids down the road better than I was able to teach them. And so golf has just taught me – it's taught me all those things that you talked about, all the patience, the integrity. I mean, it's taught us all these things. But at the end of the day, for me personally, I really realize now I can't look and I can't judge myself on where I'm at in the world rankings, where I'm at in on points list. You know, I play golf because I truly love it. And I played golf at age 6 till now because I truly love it. And that's what I have to focus on, and not about, is Bubba Watson winning or not winning? Is Bubba Watson one of the worst players or one of the best players? And that's where I had to learn that in 2017. That stuck out like a sore thumb when I was going through it.
In 2016, you didn't make the Ryder Cup team. You called Davis Love III, the Ryder Cup captain, and asked him if you could help out. And he named you one of the vice captains. And reading that chapter brought tears to my eyes, because you were just so giving, and you really, you know, you were one of the top players in the world and still are, but you didn't make that team. And instead of sulking and being critical, you basically kind of, I don't know, it took so much courage to do that, right? I mean, how did that experience impact you?
Yeah, so 2016 Ryder Cup, I didn't make the team. I didn't get picked. I was number 7 in the world at that time. And, you know, for Davis Love to take a chance, he doesn't know how Bubba Watson's going to react when he gets up there at the event. The team doesn't either, other vice captains. And so everybody was taking a chance. But again, they knew who Bubba Watson the person was, not who Bubba Watson the media or social media or the internet says. And so they embraced me. They loved that I showed up. And for me, it showed how much I truly love to help. That's what sprung into action there, is that I truly enjoy helping. And I wanted to be part of the team. You know, that was the last event my dad watched, was 2010, the Ryder Cup. So the Ryder Cup means a lot more to me because that's my dad's last event he watched me play in. And but it showed me so much about helping. I really enjoy helping. Like, winning the tournament would be great, but at the same time, helping 12 guys win the tournament was a dream come true. It was an honor and a privilege, and I I learn more about myself that week than I would playing. If I was just playing in one, I don't think I would envision it the way I did. And so it was just a dream come true to be able to help not only the team, but also the vice captains and the captains and their wives,
and
the, you know, just be right. there.
And the players embraced you. And that gave you a whole different kind of satisfaction and joy, right? And do you think you're better understood now by the players and the fans and the media, perhaps because of that experience on that 2016 Ryder Cup as a vice captain?
I would say yes. I mean, definitely, you know, I had percentage points go up when it comes to who Bubba Watson is. Definitely the players. I mean, players, vice captains, you know, everybody on that team at that week. Definitely those guys, they understand me a lot differently. They, you know, I still talk to some of the guys privately about things. So definitely the team for sure, the organizations, you know, like the PGA Tour workers, the PGA of America workers, they got to see who I am. So they understand. And that's why I'm saying that, you know, I was letting people over the internet and social media dictate how I felt. And that was causing me a lot of anxiety and stress. And so, yes, I think the people around me definitely see me in a different light now. When I talk to those guys, they understand who Bubba Watson is a lot better, for sure.
And Bubba, fast forward to the Solheim Cup 2021, and you were there cheering on the American women. You were a huge part of that. What was that experience like for you and Angie?
That was, again, it was the, there's no better way to say it, but the perfect storm. I knew the captain. I know the Solheim family. They're the owners of Ping. And then the vice captains, I knew those girls as well. And there was a couple of girls on the team that I knew, but not all of them. And so it was the perfect storm where I called Pat Hurst, the captain, and said, "Hey, is there any way I can help you?" And she said, "What would you like to do?" And I said, "You're the captain. I just want to help. I don't know how I can help, but I want to help." And so she said, "I'll give you access to everything. You'll be like an assistant kind of thing." And honorary captain. And I said, "All right." And so we went up there, and it was a dream come true again. It was helping. It was that helping feeling where I felt like I was cheering these girls on. And I'm not even saying just the USA team. I'm talking about both teams. I was at the first tee box, you know, I told every team good luck, every team member. It wasn't about U.S. or Europe. It was just about women's golf in general. And so it was just obviously I was pulling for the U.S. a little bit more than the other team, but it was still a privilege and honor to watch some of these great girls play golf. And again, it goes back to that helping. I just felt like it was something I could do and help by being there, and then help by making sure they had waters and drinks. Make sure they had their sandwiches. And I'm good at that. I'm good at making sure they have their stuff they need.
I just love it. And the women embraced you as well. So getting back to your own game, what's your mindset now about your future on the course? Do you think about winning more majors? Do you have the confidence now that you can win more major titles, perhaps another Masters?
Yeah, I've been in the gym. I haven't played any golf because my kids have been playing soccer, and my son is 9, so he finally got to play. I let him play tackle football. So, you know, it's been a fun sitting at home watching my kids play sports, being a part of it. Really enjoyed it. But me and my wife started training together. So we're in the gym, picked up a little bit more muscle. So I'm looking forward to it. I'll need the energy level to be a little bit higher going forward. And that's the one thing that I noticed is I need to get some more energy level, my energy level up, my muscles up. And now with Phil Mickelson inspiring us and keeping watching him winning on that Champions Tour. I mean, I don't see quitting anytime soon. I feel like I want to play and I want to win. My goal is to get to 15 wins. I'm 3 away. So if that means regular tournaments or majors, I mean, I'm going to give it my all and try to get to that magic number of 15. And then, if I do get there, then we'll have to change that goal, I guess.
I love it. And I know you said your goal is to get into the Hall of Fame, and that would be amazing. And then what about, you think you would eventually play on the Champions Tour? You want to keep going?
Yes. You know, it's funny watching watching Jim Furyk and Stuart Sink. I know Stuart Sink's not on the Champions Tour. He's winning on the PGA Tour. But watching his son caddy for him, watching Jim Furyk's son caddy for him, watching these different kids that I know and watch grow up caddying for their dad. You know, me and my son Caleb talk about it. And so the Champions Tour is definitely something on my radar, just so I can have my kids caddy for me. That'd be a dream come true, because it'd just be us out there as a family and having fun. There's definitely, I'm trying to change the Champions Tour to 45 years old so I can get out there faster.
I love it. And let me ask you a couple more here, and then we'll wrap up. But, you know, there's so much talent and depth on the men's tour. Do you still feel like on any given day that you can go out there and beat anybody?
100%. I mean, that's the challenge. That's the goal. That's the goal, is to do it. And that's why I wanted to train. I felt like there was a couple things I was missing. The technique side of it, I don't feel like I was missing as much. I felt like I needed to have more energy for four rounds of golf, a pro-am and four rounds of golf. I felt like I needed more stamina, cardio. I needed some more muscle, just so I can, compete. And so I felt like this is what I was missing, or I was kind of, you know, coming back from 17 where I lost all the weight. Now I need to put the muscle back on. So that's where I feel like if I do that, that's one of the things I definitely can get back out there and compete at a high level. Like I want to do, and like I've done before.
Bryson DeChambeau, watch out, right?
Well, not that big. I'm not trying to get that
much. Speaking of Bryson, what are your thoughts on that upcoming match between Bryson and Brooks Koepka and their made for social media feud? What do you think about all that?
Exactly. I think it'll be fun. You know, I said Bryson's definitely going to be hitting it past Brooks. Brooks will be quiet, I believe. What I know of Brooks, he'll be quiet, but I think he'll probably pull it out in the end. But definitely Bryson will be chirping about how long he is compared to Brooks. So it'll be interesting. It'll be fun, especially if they both start bantering back and forth. But, you know, sometimes when people get quiet when they're focused. So hopefully they will banter back and forth and make it fun for everybody.
Well, I know you own a minor league baseball team, an ice cream shop, a car dealership. You donate a lot to the hospital there in Pensacola. And I also read that one day you may want to run for mayor. That would be fun. Bubba the politician.
Yeah, exactly. I've always, you know, it's one of those things where I really enjoyed getting to know the mayor, a couple of different mayors in my local area. And, respect what they do, because I mean they're again, goes back to those hard decisions we all face, right? And so it would just be something, because of my local ties to the town, it would just be fun. And the more I dig into it, the more I watch, you know, I'm not saying it'll be easy, so maybe that'll be a different book I'd write after becoming mayor, but it would be something fun to do. My wife said there's no chance she's letting me run for mayor, but maybe I can change her mind in the near future.
I think you'd be great, a great mayor. Well, listen, continued success. The book is called Up and Down, Victories and Struggles in the Course of Life. Bubba, you are a joy to know. Continued success. And thanks for really sharing your story. I think it's going to help a lot of people out there. Hope you enjoyed my interview with Bubba Watson and with Grant Waite. Have a great weekend, everybody. And remember what Ralph Waldo Emerson once said: what lies behind you and what lies in front of you pales in comparison to what lies inside of you. Be well, be safe. I'll talk to you next Saturday morning right here on Sports Interview with Anne Liguori.